it'll be ready. Thank you.
Okay. So welcome everyone to our regular meeting of June 25th, 2026. We have lots of people joining us today. So welcome everybody. Nice to see you. Want to call the roll?
I sure can. First Selectman Rudy, Town of Monroe.
Here.
Thank you. First Selectperson Vitale, Town of Fairfield.
Here.
Thank you. First Selectman Lent, Town of Easton.
Here.
Thank you. Mayor Chess, Town of Stratford.
Here.
Ken Flato, Proxy Mayor Ganim, City of Bridgeport.
Here.
And First Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trouble.
I'm here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. So let's rise to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
But we into the side, into the republic from which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So the first item on our agenda is public participation. Is there anyone here from the public who would like to speak?
We didn't receive any requests in public comment today.
And nobody's here that wants to speak right now, right? Okay. All right, so let's move on then. So first item presentation is the Connecticut DOT Commissioner, Ugolito. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Oh.
Welcome. Thank you. So just wanted to spend a few minutes here at your meeting talking about what's going on in Connecticut Department of Transportation. The partnership here with MetroCog. So we are 5 years now into the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the five-year surface transportation bill that replaced the previous iterations, MAP 21, FAST Act, and previous versions before that. It's the basis of all federal funding for transportation that comes to each state in our nation. The bill expires September 30th of 2026. You know, we've been looking back and seeing what's been going on over the past 5 years, and we have very clear positive progress here in Connecticut and across the country. We've, instead of looking at just how much money is being spent, because there was an increase in a total amount available for every state, we instead looked at what is happening at the workforce level. So we pulled workforce data, and we are at our highest level of construction, highway construction employment in 20 years. And that's as far back as the data goes. So, you know, it's clear positive sign that more work is being done in the state on our transportation assets than any time in the past 20 years, which is a good thing, because we also have been looking at tracking, well, worrying about the trend line of the age of our assets. The majority of our bridges are now eligible for Social Security. there's a huge spike in bridges that are 60 and 70 years old at this point in the state. And then same with our roads. Most the overwhelming majority of our roads in the state were built in the 60s and 70s, and then to a lesser extent the 80s. So everything is getting close to aging out around the same time. So while the federal funds have been a true lifesaver for our state, it also means that we have a lot more on the horizon that needs to get done. We, you know, all told Connecticut, because the federal funds are via formula. So our apportionment from the federal government was $5.38 billion total. But we also competed for discretionary grants and secured around $2.5 billion in discretionary grants. A majority of that is for the railroad. We have, when you put aside all the highway and bridge projects we have to do, we have around a little over $10 billion worth of work we have to do on the railroad between New Haven and Greenwich. The majority of that is on the movable rail bridges. The Norwalk River Bridge is under construction right now, and it's the largest project in our state's history in terms of total dollar value. The next project is reconstruction of the rail bed and the overhead power structures in the Stratford and Bridgeport area. That's called Time One. That is starting construction this summer. And that will help increase speeds through the corridor and make it more reliable. The next project after that is the Devon Rail Bridge between Milford and Stratford. That is about a $3.1 billion project. And then we have the Saugatuck River Railroad Bridge and the Koskov Bridge. All movable rail bridges were built in either late 1890s or the first years of 1900s. So well past their useful life. They continue to fail. At some point, we will not be able to continue to run rail traffic over them. So they have to get replaced. Our position is that should not be the responsibility of Connecticut alone. It's a national asset. It's critical to the national economy, Northeast economy, and Connecticut's economy. So we need the federal government to help contribute to the costs. Fortunately, the next version of the transportation bill that's being considered in Washington, D.C., the House Transportation Committee passed their bill. The Senate has not done any action yet. The House bill that was passed out of committee, but it's awaiting action by the floor, has no guaranteed funding for passenger rail. Unlike the previous bill that we are in right now, which had 20 plus billion for passenger rail in the Northeast Corridor alone. So that is a huge problem for Connecticut. The other big problem for Connecticut is when you look at what's happening with inflation in this economy, on the highway construction side, we've seen over the past 3 years, highway construction has gone up by 70%. So the total cost to deliver a highway project has increased by 70%. The next transportation bill that the House Transportation Committee passed out of their committee has a 0.9% increase for Connecticut in total apportionment. Voted by the House would be a step backwards for Connecticut. So we are very concerned by that. We've expressed our concerns to our delegation down in D.C. We're hopeful the Senate will have a more appropriate and effective bill, and then they can meet in conference committee. I think the next step most likely is they will not pass something by September 30th, and they'll have to do a continuing resolution for some time. And we're hopeful that that will at least continue at inflationary levels while they work on a final bill. The other thing, just wanted to take time to thank all the municipal CEOs for the partnership this past winter. I know it's summertime, but so we always talk about winter at DOT. We think it was a pretty successful winter in terms of being able to take care of the significant snowstorms that we encountered. We know that your public works teams worked significant amounts of overtime and partnership with the DOT and other public works across the state to make sure the state was reopened and people were able to get to where they need to go. It showed the effectiveness of our public works across the state. And so I just wanted to thank you all and your public works teams for the partnerships this season. I know the salt was a bit of a struggle for all of us. It was a national issue in the Northeast, essentially. But I hopefully we'll have better conditions this coming winter for salt. So with that, I just wanted to, get a lay of the land where we were. Thank you all. And then happy to answer any questions about what's going on in the DOT. I do want to introduce, we've had some restructuring in the DOT. So Carlo Leone is our director of municipal affairs. So he is, his role is really to be a liaison with municipal CEOs. Mike Salter and Matt, Mike Salter leads our MPO coordination unit. So works is the direct contact with the MPOs, and then we also have staff breaking up all the different MPOs. So Matt gets to represent the MetroCog for us. So anytime you need anything, you can go to Carlo. You reach out to MetroCog, they'll come to Matt and Mike. And then we also stood up a federal affairs unit as well as our legislative affairs unit, which has always been around. So happy to answer any questions.
Okay, does anyone want to start? Any questions?
I had a question.
Is that Terry?
No, it's Dan.
Oh, it's Dan. Okay.
Just real quick, for the Norwalk Bridge, do you know if they're going to put a new higher speed switch in there? Because that was the bottleneck. It was like a 15-mile-an-hour switch on Norwalk.
So we've already done, we've completed all the interlockings that are being installed. We installed an interlocking that allows access to a new branch yard on the Danbury branch. The curvatures through there and the age of the structure are the reason for the speeds through there. The The density curves, we can't go high speed through there because of the curvature. It's not as bad as the curve here in Bridgeport, but it is. We did install actually two interlockings, a high speed interlocking to the east of where the bridge is, as well as one to the west that allows access to the Danbury Branch Dockyard.
So just so I understand, so does that mean that like a Metro North train headed to New York can go through there faster than they used to be able to, or because the curvature can't be changed, it's the same 15 mile an hour limit?
So they can go through there faster, but it's not gonna be 70 miles per hour.
Okay. Okay. All right. That was a big issue, I know. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, just really quick, if you don't mind. Thank you for coming to the meeting, Commissioner Aquilino. I just want to say we're very happy with LHTSIP. We've been doing some projects in town. It's been working out fantastic. Just offline, I know you were there. I brought up the situation of the Stevenson Dam. And there's just been some. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
I'm getting some weird murmur, so I just wanted to clarify. Anyway, so the Stevenson Dam, it's been going since about 1919. We visited it last week with Comptroller Sean Scanlon. We had a really nice visit. There's just been some conversations, I believe, with WestCog in regard to that dam project. I don't know if you're familiar with it or talking about it in any way. I just want to be up to date on any conversations that may be occurring.
Yeah, so it is our bridge. So we have conducted multiple studies over time. The initial studies that were done looked at an off bridge or an off dam alignment for the bridge
Yes.
structure. There was significant pushback on that concept. So we are initiating a new investigation to see could the bridge be rebuilt on top of the dam. Is it even structurally feasible? So that the consultant, I think it's hard to see in Hanover, but don't quote me on that, is initiating that study right now. We also are initiating a NEPA process to also look at downstream crossings. The problem with the downstream crossing idea is the grade change between up where the existing bridge structure and the road is today versus, when you go downstream of the dam, is a significant grade change to be able to build the road across there. So there'd be some pretty significant retaining walls and some property takings. There's also apparently some birds we have to be aware of that nest through there. Nothing's easy.
Five bald eagles yesterday alone, I saw.
All the eagles seem quite plentiful nowadays.
A lot of
I
them.
know.
Not that I don't want to protect them, but we've reinitiated the process. We're trying to figure out. We have been talking to the dam owner. There is a very like the deed is from 1919. It talks about their fiscal contribution, but it doesn't say how much. It talks about the road, that they have to contribute to the road, I believe, but not the bridge. And when technically in legal terms, the road is just the pavement on top of a bridge. So it is underway. We don't have a solution or a path forward at this time. So we're initiating rescoping both potential options to see what might be the most constructible, most feasible.
Great. Thank you for the information. I just want to bring it up to you in regards to our current scenarios that we're dealing with, just so you understand. Because the trucks can't go over, they still go over. So we have a large amount of tractor trailers consistently traveling over that bridge. Now, what happens is there's two things. The GPS or Waze or whatever option people may use will send them a different direction. And now we have tractor trailers going through our neighborhoods. So we have tractor trailers that are completely violating the inability to go over the bridge. And we have tractor trailers going through the neighborhood. So now we have two different problems. I'm not a complainer. I just want to make you aware of what we're dealing with. There are a lot of tractor trailers still going over that bridge. So just so you know.
Yeah.
Also, one other thing I just want to bring up to you, Commissioner, this will be my last thing. We've had a couple unfortunate situations with individuals that have decided to make a bad a decision to use the bridge in ways that I don't want to bring up. There were conversations about possible safety railings on the bridge to stop that. I think we've had three people in the last few years. So I just want to make you aware of the situations we're dealing with, Monroe. Thank you for listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, the truck issue is a significant problem that we continue to see. Many posted bridge load rating restriction posted bridges across the state, trucks ignore it. For one, if they are a casual trucker, I'll say, and they don't have the official commercial GPS in their cab, it Waze and Google will not put any types of restrictions, even for instance on the Merritt Parkway, right, where they are hitting our bridges. We ask Google and Waze to put in cab notifications for people that there are low bridges ahead, and they refuse. So that's a frustration for our part. Similar with the load ratings on our bridges. If you are a non, if you don't have a commercial GPS, it's going to send you the easiest path of motion. It's like water, right? Traffic just will flow wherever it's the easiest motion. So, and the security safety railings on the bridge, that is difficult given the structural conditions. Any additional weight would be a load rating issue and imbalance it. So, but the future structure would have all preventative safety measures. So I hear you on that. We could put up, we could look, I don't, it probably might not be helpful, but we have on other bridge structures put up suicide prevention hotline numbers. At both the approaches to the bridge and at a few locations on the bridge. So I can talk to our bridge team about that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Once again, I'm just moving the concerns in Monroe uphill. One other thing, and I thought that was my last thing, but you stimulated something else in my mind. We have a railroad that has gone through Monroe. I believe it's the I, it was the old Stevenson Company, right? Which is why Stevenson is now Stevenson. The maintenance and the upkeep of those bridges are very poor, to say the least. The reality is on Route 111 and 34, I have a bridge there that is really in disarray, and it's the entrance to my town, and it looks horrific. I have on multiple occasions tried to reach out to the railroad company to see if we could refinish it, clean it, at least make it look presentable. Because when you're coming off 34 from either side, whether it's Newtown or Danbury or New Haven or Seymour, Oxford, it's the first thing you see coming into our town. And many, sports games and stuff, people travel through there. So it's really unsightly. And I'd really like to start cleaning some of that stuff up. I don't know if there's any way that you could assist me with that railroad to try to get. I know that DOT is going to be doing a retaining wall in that area. And I was wondering, while they're doing that simultaneously, if there's a way that we can work with the railroad to get at least some refinishing there so it looks cleaner. Not a major project, just help beautify my town and its entrances. That's all.
Yep, we can talk to them if that is time or
Comment zones or anything?
okay. Yeah, I'll talk to our rails team and see who our point of contact is with the railroad there.
Commissioner, you get that done for me, I'll be extremely happy. It's a paint job. I'm asking you for a paint job. Thank you very
Yeah, I don't want to overpromise. The railroads
I
are
understand.
they're the most difficult people to work with.
We understand about being careful to overpromise in these positions. So again, thank you for your time.
I just wanted some big picture for a minute. I know we all have our pet projects and everything. Having been on Metropod since Commissioner Sullivan's days in the 90s, I've been around the loop with programs, and you know how vital the state and federal funding is to all our localities. I think the concern, the two concerns and one question, the primary concern is, we appreciate it's been up and down, frankly, in my opinion, over the years, as to the kind of focus on, hey, here's what MetroCogs or the MPOs are recommending, versus here's the state priorities. And sometimes there have been some disconnects over the years. I think in the last 5, 7 years, it's really come a long way that way. So really appreciative of that. And this MetroCog, as long as I've seen it, has been working really well together, as well as the Valley, to prioritize in a, you know, in a collegial way, in a consensual way. But what I wanted to ask you is, the state transportation fund and how it plays into the federal funding. You know, you mentioned federal funding might, you know, cut back on rail, but hopefully the highway part of things is going to be sustainable. You know, you never know what's going on down there, but do you have a sense of how the state funding and the federal funding are going to interplay, you know, with the 5-year tip over the next 5 years? I mean, are you fairly optimistic? Are you worried about anything?
Absolutely worried. So the Special Transportation Fund, so all of our match for federal dollars is bonded, right? And so it's all we go sell bonds on the market through special tax obligation bonds, and we use funds in the Special Transportation Fund to pay the debt service on those bonds. The Special Transportation Fund is projected to be in a deficit within the next 2 years. The main driver of that is the cost of providing bus and rail service in Connecticut. Right now, when you look at total expenditures out of the SDF, there's $1 billion in debt service each year. There's about $1 billion to the DOT for our operations. Over two-thirds of that $1 billion to the DOT is to pay to operate the bus and the rail system. And that's only going to grow. So that is squeezing everything else out, and it's putting pressure on the ability to do more capital projects because we don't have enough money in the SDF, then we can't sell more bonds to do more capital projects. So it is a significant concern. I think in the next 2 years, the state legislature will have to work with the governor to find a new solution to how to address the funding situation in the SDF. At a bare minimum, we'll always have to match the federal funds, but right now we're overmatching the federal funds. So if we reach a point where the SDF is in crisis, we would be shrinking our capital program and probably having to shrink our public transportation programs in order to meet our federal minimum obligations. So it is a huge concern. I think we'll have to have that conversation in the next 2 years. Absolutely, we'll have to have the conversation in the next 2 years.
Thank you.
Can you talk, people might not be aware, can you just provide a little information, Garrett, on what funds the SCF and why the insolvency is projected?
So historically, it used to be gas
Yeah.
and diesel tax and license fees, permit fees. Starting in 2001, 2002, they reduced the gas tax by 14 cents. So it's been at 25 cents since the late 90s. There's also a petroleum products tax, which is a wholesale tax on barrels of oil. That is a percentage tax. So either the percentage tax actually has a cap. So if the price of oil goes up too much, there's a cap on how much could be generated from that petroleum products tax. Gas tax has no indexing, unlike most other states in the country. So it doesn't adjust over time. It doesn't adjust for inflation. It doesn't adjust for fuel efficiency standards. So instead, what the legislature has done under the previous governor and under this governor is they have dedicated larger portions of other fees and taxes. So they took 0.5% of the statewide sales tax and put that in the transportation fund. So that now is the largest source of revenue for the SDF. That's about 38% of the SDF. 37% of the SDF is made up of gas and diesel tax. And then the rest of it is made up of petroleum products tax, license permits fees, and other revenues collected. So, really, the sales tax addition and the fact that the sales tax it grows with the economy has been the only thing actually staving off this crisis. The other thing that has staved off the crisis is we received about $1 billion in federal funding in COVID relief funds to pay for bus and rail service. So that has helped with fewer people riding. We've had to pay out more state subsidy. And so that has staved off the inevitable on the bus and rail service fiscal cliff. So those two factors have really staved off the situation. But the SDF, if you looked 20 years ago, it was half of it was gas and diesel tax. Now it's only about 37%.
Thanks. Just for everyone's edification, if that was helpful to
Yeah,
know
no, great
where the
point.
funds come from and why it's not a lack of financial prudence, it's a lack
Yeah.
of revenue.
Yeah, it just hasn't grown with costs. And as we increased our capital expenditures by we doubled the amount of capital projects we're doing in the state, and
25
we
cents.
more than doubled how much we're spending on bus and rail service. The revenues haven't been able to keep pace with that growth. Jen.
Yes. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, just really quick. Do you know anything about the two lanes on 95 east of New Haven to the Rhode Island border? Because I know they did a study saying that should become three lanes, but I mean, obviously it would cost an enormous amount of money. Do you have any updates for the group on what the thinking is on that?
So, similar to what we're doing here on 95 in the Metrocog region, we are doing what's called a project environmental linkage study. So it's a year or two behind where we are in the Bridgeport region in terms of the status of the study, but we are doing a PEL study to look at from Branford to Rhode Island, what are the needs and deficiencies on that roadway. And how can we address the congestion that occurs? The congestion is not all the time. It's frequently seasonal, and frequently weekends. So how can we address that? Are there geometric configurations to some of the on-ramps and off-ramps that need tailored changes to help address the congestion on I-95 from Branford to Rhode Island? So that study's underway. It's about a year and a half behind where we are with the Greater Bridgeport Region study.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful.
Because I don't know, of all of 95, I don't know where else it's two lanes other than South Carolina. I mean, it seems very odd.
Can you bring us up to date on the Bridgeport study? Because I know there's obviously been a lot of work done in this region, but there's still, as we all know, an incredible amount of congestion.
Yes. Yeah. So phase one has been completed, right? And so identifying needs and deficiencies. Just as you all probably remember, it's not just 95 that we're looking at. We're looking at the parallel roads as well that make up your communities, because that is impacting the highway in Connecticut. Unlike most other parts of the country, we use the interstate like a local road. Get on for an exit or two, get off. That causes a lot of the problems. There's the volume issue, but all as well as the on-ramps, off-ramps, the weaving that occurs, the brake lights that come on, causing a ripple effect down the line. Phase one was completed, that mobility analysis. Phase two, just looking at my notes, there's a PAC meeting for July 29th, to look at the screening methodology and the universal alternatives. Matt, correct me if I misspeak at all, right?
Correct.
Because I know you guys are actively engaged. But and then that after that, the level one screening, which will basically screen out any things that are, when you look at the universal alternatives, it's like putting them through a strainer. The first strainer with the bigger holes, right, is the level one screening. So some things that are completely impossible as an alternative will get jettisoned at that level one screening that's going to occur this fall. And then, so after that, then we'll be able to do the refined analysis. What made it through that level one screening? What should we advance forward into the next stage to do some refinements to see what are some things we could advance? What we do now, the benefit of the PEL process is you're able to take things and do some early action projects. So before you get to the point where you do this a big project, which could take 15 years to execute. There might be through that screening process some things we could execute within the next few years that could have some immediate short-term benefits. So, for instance, in Waterbury, we did a PEL up there, what to do with a Mixmaster region in Waterbury. And while we work towards the full rebuild of the Mixmaster, we have executed some early action projects to make some changes to some ramps. It's already improving some conditions eastbound through the Mixmaster. And advancing some other early action. So that's what's going to come out of this level one and level two screen. Anything I've said wrong, Mike or Matt?
No, I would just I would liken the level one, level two screening and the early action projects to what we are looking at right behind us, which is the additional exit lane on 95 North to Route 8 North that has significantly reduced congestion in this area. I mean, we literally see it every day. So we see it. We saw it before and we've seen it after. And I think that was one of the projects that it wasn't a Pell study, but it was a similar type of study that was initiated back in 2016, 17. And that was one of the pieces that came out of that analysis was the bottleneck here. And they were able to initiate and then deliver a project in pretty short time for what it was, adding an additional exit lane, an exit only lane, and then a through and exit lane. And that has significantly reduced the amount of backup we see, especially in the afternoon, coming 95 North into the city and people trying to take that Route 8 North. So those are the types of projects, the early action ones that the commissioner that talks about that are not small, but smaller than what a full-blown, you know, major interstate project would be that do have significant benefits. And I think part of the benefit of the Pell study and looking at kind of everything holistically is you can identify those little choke points that might not solve the entire issue, but can certainly make a significant improvement on the current operations, which this two-lane exit certainly has done right here.
Yeah, but obviously there's other areas.
Yeah,
going down county, you know.
Yeah, well, Stamford.
They have their own.
When you go, so Stamford and Greenwich has their own Pell that's on the same timeline as this one. So that is also underway. So Stamford, we had an early action project actually spun out similar where we add an auxiliary lane. So that is having significant benefit on the southbound portion. So that also has basically with those Pells underway, there's going to be significant opportunity for major improvements on 95 without having to realizing the constraints we have within the geographic footprint.
Which is a big problem.
Yes.
Because it's a very popular place.
Yeah.
And it's a faster place.
Yeah.
We traveled from Virginia lots of times up back home, and we don't hit traffic until we get into Greenwich. And then it's right. We're back in Connecticut. So I know it's frustrating in this geographic that you have our problems. You know, don't have a place to extend like New Jersey has.
Exactly.
You know, it's eight lanes of 95 and the Jersey Highway. So it's.
But they still have their traffic too.
I know they do.
Yeah, the more lanes you build, more capacity. So we're going to do that bridge to Long Island, right?
Yeah. Please, could you do that? For several reasons.
There you go.
You know, Mayor Chess, you stole what I wanted to bring up. You know, the country was built on structural visionaries. Now we're kind of in the world of technological visionaries. However, you know, you see this bridge coming up on a regular basis. It was an original idea in the early 1900s, I believe, and it's been recently surfaced. How many, Commissioner, how many people actually travel to Long Island? Would that actually relieve some of the I-95 pressure?
We don't know. We don't have data on how many people are traveling to the North Shore or the South Shore. So there would need to be a full origin destination analysis. But we, all of the studies that we have done show that the overwhelming majority would not be traveling there.
Okay. Just wondering, it's popping up a lot.
Most of it's passed through traffic, right down past into New York, past New York, and the freight traffic is traveling through the 95 corridor, the 87 corridor. The freight traffic is not going Long Island up north.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any more questions?
So Christine's got one of them.
Not really a question. Thank you, Commissioner, for being there. Sorry I couldn't be with you in person. Just wanted to put on everybody's radar that Fairfield is looking to apply to the federal build grant for Lower Black Rock Turnpike. We had done a traffic study years ago, and it kind of has been stalled. Wanted just DOT to know about it and see if there's any interest in partnering. But we will follow up at a later date, but just wanted to let everyone know that that's on our radar now.
Thanks, Christine. I reached out to DOT yesterday. We're setting up a call, so we're on it.
Okay, so I'm just going to take an opportunity since I'm sitting here We have a scheduled project in Trumbull. It's the White Plains Road Daniels Farm intersection, the resignalization of the light and direction of the traffic in that area, the extremely dangerous intersection. It is scheduled to start now, I believe in August. This has been ongoing for years. And because we have a new plaza that's open there, CV, I don't know if you know where I'm talking about in downtown Trumbull.
No.
It's right smack in the middle of Trumbull Center. A lot of traffic on that White Plains Road, which is a state road, and part of Daniels Farm Road. 127 is part of a state road as well. It's just an accident waiting to happen, pedestrian, vehicular. We have a lot of kids on bikes now, which is another whole subject of conversation.
E-bikes.
Yeah, and we had one child, unfortunately, get killed last year in Trumbull. We don't want to ever see that again. But that intersection is supposed to be worked on. Just trying to get an update. I know we've talked about this. Last update I got was, I think, somewhere in early August.
I think August, yeah. That's what I was like. So I'll check when I get back to the office and I'll email you.
Yeah, that would be great. And as far as, I don't know if you cover this part of, the mowing of the grass on 95 and Merritt Parkway,
yep.
Are off and on ramps. We've had conversations. It's better than it was, but we're still dealing with, grass that's too high, sight lines and all that.
We have conflicting opinions in the public about mowing.
Mm-hmm.
We had to, the federal government imposed a rule on us where we have to conserve a certain amount of space and do low mow operations for pollinators. So that is one reason. But anytime there's like specific locations that you want particular attention to, we can have a garage lessen attention on other areas and more attention on areas that are important to you.
Yeah, we do. We're in contact with the garage too. So as I said, it's been better. But there's still some areas that get overgrown, especially our on and off ramps of Lute and 25 and Merritt Parkway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and the other thing, this is mundane stuff. It's sitting here. Our commuter parking lots are also, people are constantly calling us. There's garbage in there. Why can't you pick it up? And blah 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 blah. So I know that's probably on your radar as well.
It
so.
Is.
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Rutigliano's.
Yeah.
We do try. I mean, it is very difficult. We don't put garbage cans there because otherwise we'd have to be, we don't have like garbage truck hauling trucks that can come around and pick up garbage cans. But
we get that.
Yeah.
We have the same problem.
So we do try to go and do the litter pickup. It's not as frequent as we want. And there's still, we're still understaffed in our maintenance shop. We're better than we were 2 years ago, but we're still understaffed. So it's, we try to keep up with it. We know it's not great. We are trying to do more work on our park and ride commuter lots where have better lighting. In some locations, we want to put up cameras, especially if there's illegal activity occurring there. So that might be an opportunity to partner with your police department on that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Commissioner, I do have one more thing, and I apologize because I just keep bringing one more thing to the table, but this is how it works. Well, our relationship with the state of Monroe with the DOT has been fantastic. I have no issues, but thank you for telling me about the pollinators, because when that grass gets long and it's not mowed, now you give me the ability to tell the general public why that is occurring. But the question I do have for you is, because our traffic patterns have changed because of GPS and things like that, some of the lights seem to be a little longer than they should or a little shorter than they should. Do you do studies on a regular basis, or how does that work as far as changing our traffic patterns to make, let's say, Route 25 a little bit more passable? Because it does gridlock a little bit. And I think most communities are dealing with that. I just wanted to know if there is a situation where I truly feel that a light needs to be changed, how do we necessarily go about it? What is the actual protocol in doing that?
Yeah, if you feel a light has to be looked at and addressed, a simple email from yourself. I don't know if you serve technically as a local traffic authority, or of course, if your chief of police does that, but
That's our board of police commissioners, but
okay.
I'm talking,
So, a request from your board of police commissioners, your LPA, to our department to do a signal study or to look at the signal. It is all that is necessary for us to take a look at that. You know, newer traffic signals are much easier to adapt to the changing conditions. The older ones, you know, we had, as of last year, we officially have no more traffic signals working off of DOS. So we all of them are off DOS-based systems. But there are still a lot of old ones out there that use in-loop pavement sensors, which are often broken and don't work. The new overhead detection systems are much easier to adapt to conditions. So that send in an email from you and your board of police commissioners, and we can take a look. We can even do if it's the whole corridor on Route 25 through their specific intersections, we could look at that.
That would be great, Commissioner, because currently, right now, First Selectwoman Tesoro and myself, we're working on a joint project on the border of Trumbull and Monroe, and I'm suspecting that there will be another light added there. And you know, the community is going to be very concerned about traffic and traffic flow. So whatever assistance we could get as that project evolves and the current situation that we kind of have. I mean, traffic is a good thing, right? You know, traffic allows people to stop into businesses and kind of help the local economy. So it's not a terrible thing, but it does get gridlocked. And I appreciate that information. I'll talk to the Board of Police Commissioners as I get complaints to send it to your office, and I'm sure you'll be quick to react. So thank you very much.
Did traffic ops present here yet this year?
No.
No.
No,
no, to T-Tech they did.
To our T-Tech.
So yeah, traffic ops did come down to present them with a contact
Perfect.
person. So the LTA should be aware.
And if you have any issues with specific lights and you would like us to take a look at them, you can either send with the contact with the LTA to MetroCog and they'll tell me, or if you get my information, you can just address to me right away and I can get the right eyes on it.
Fantastic. I've just never asked that question. I know we have made some changes to our DPW, but I kind of just tell them and then they do the. I just wanted to know the necessary protocol. So knowing that comes from the police commissioner, you, that's helpful. So thank you.
Yeah, anything you need, Terry, just let us know. We can coordinate that.
Okay, great. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Have a good weekend. Good. Okay. Parking?
I think we did it already. You're are you validated? You parking by?
Oh, no. Parking
Peter. Already. Okay.
Sure. All right, let's move along on the agenda. Next item is approval of the meeting minutes from May 28th, 2026. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes, please?
I moved.
Second.
Two.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to our action items. Item A is fiscal year 2027 budget. It's attachment B for the agenda.
Thank you.
Could I have a motion, please, to approve that?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Christine. Thank you.
There, Christine.
Christine.
Christine. Christine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so as we you know, we presented this last month, so nothing really changed. It's a balanced budget for next year. We do have some increase in revenue based on additional RSG money that we're getting from the state for the housing work and the stormwater work. But really it's similar. I made a couple modifications. Christine, we noted the WPCA funding from Fairfield is no longer there for this year. Just want to make sure we clarified that. That was a project from last year that's not continuing because it's done. But otherwise, pretty straightforward budget as we discussed last month. But if there are any questions, happy to answer them.
No questions? Thanks. Any discussion? Are we good? You have something, Kat?
I was going to say, do we need a motion to move it?
No, we have a motion.
Sorry. I was on a text. Sorry.
Just one question. So we're looking at the budget, looking at their actual versus
for 26.
And the difference of $1.3 million. What was that differential?
That was which was approved last year. We spent a significant amount in PURA legal fees. We approved 70,000, and it was actually over 200 that we spent. We had $100,000 assistance from WestPAV, but that was a planned deficit.
But I think that if you're talking about the budget 26 versus projected actuals of the
right.
one app, so that really that's a factor of the way we're funded. So we typically on the revenue side, a lot of our money is contractual. So it comes to us through a grant. We've basically give it to a consultant to do the work on. So we're projecting at the beginning of the year how much we're going to pay a consultant. A big portion of that is our brownfields funding, which we have a revolving loan fund for. So we typically will build in a amount of RLF money that we're going to use on an annual basis. If the loans don't come through for that year, we just don't spend it. So while it looks like we haven't, our projections are off, they're really just based on the contractual obligations that we have for the year and whether or not we spend all the money we anticipate spending contractually. Typically, if we don't spend it in the current year, it will get spent in the following year based on the contracts that we already have executed.
But it's really just grant funded.
It's all grant. Yeah, it's all grant funded contractual money, direct money that comes into us and goes directly out to another source.
That's how the chair. So the Safe Streets is like a good chunk of the.
Yeah, and we didn't spend as much this year, and well, that will get spent over the next year and a half. It's just a matter of kind of when those invoices come in and when the project actually kicks off and gets started.
Okay, thank you. Okay, all in favor? Any more discussion? Are we good? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, let's go to our next action item, which is the fiscal year 2027 Regional Services Grant Work Plan, which is attachment C. Can I have a motion to approve that?
So moved.
Sorry, and second, please.
Second.
Give everyone a chance. So again, this is our regional services grant. That's our state funded non-transportation specific planning money that we get from the state. We are receiving a total this year of just over 1.1 million in RSG funding. It was a 704,000 last year. That difference, as I said before, is the increase that we received as part of Public Act 25-1. Which was $200,000 dedicated to housing planning for the region to assist with the implementation of the housing bill, as well as $200,000 for either solid waste planning or stormwater management and MS4 planning. We anticipate using that second $200,000 tranche for stormwater management and MS4 support for your municipalities. We're doing some mapping work right now for Easton, which is really helping them get all of their storm sewer network mapped and the outfalls mapped. We're working on that now. As we move into next year, we'll be reaching out to your municipal staff that deal with the MS4 permitting. We are also participating in a couple different MS4 statewide working groups because the permits themselves are changing with some different requirements. So we're going to be able to assist you all with some of those requirements and additional both mapping and analysis and potentially some of the testing requirements that come with that permit as well through this funding. So that's really, and otherwise the RSG funding really helps provide resources for us to provide the technical assistance, grant writing, non-transportation related planning work, land use planning, economic development planning, that type of work is all funded through our RSG grant.
Sure. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
That's, you know.
Let's see, we should hold on.
Yeah,
we can. And then move to five if you want.
Yeah.
Or we can go to the other business first and then go backwards, whatever you want to do.
You have a preference?
Doesn't matter to me.
Why don't we do our other business?
Yeah, that's fine.
Should we go to discussion items?
Yeah, we can go seven. So, Just very quickly, I mentioned it last month. We are in the process of updating our metropolitan transportation plan, which is the 25-year long-range transportation plan that we are required to update by Federal Highways as part of our transportation planning funding that we get. With that, we have to submit projects to Connecticut DOT so they can do air quality modeling on every project within the MTP. We've met with each one of your staffs on projects that were included 4 years ago, and kind of went through projects that have either already been completed and can be pulled off, projects that you want to keep on there, projects potentially that were on there and you don't want on there any longer, and new projects. And all of those have to be submitted through a form that we've created. And I think most staff are working on that now, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention that your staff are submitting those projects so we can have a compendium of projects from our region that will then be pushed up to Connecticut DOT so they can include all of those projects as part of their air quality modeling, which is required a required part of the MTP project identification process.
July 1st is the due
And then
date.
July 1st is the deadline for that. But I believe almost everyone is at
We're
least
getting
started. We're
there.
getting most of them
We're
in.
getting there.
Ken.
So just a quick question. Is there any tentative draft list created yet or no?
Yeah, we've had
What do you mean?
like a projects generally.
Yeah, I mean, can we get a list of
Yeah.
whatever? Because as you know, some of our communities, left hand and right hand sometimes doesn't always.
Yeah, we can
Yeah,
send it to you.
that'd be great. Thank you.
And there are projects that just as for everyone's awareness, there's projects that the state gives to us that they want to include for our region for the next 25 years. And then there's also projects that are identified locally and kind of make their way up to the state. So it's a bi-directional process. So that is that one. I can move on to the next one is just the economic development strategy. As we talked about before, we are updating our SEDS. Noah's taking the lead on that. He put together a survey. We are meeting with some stakeholders over the next couple of months, and then we'll be reaching out and setting up meetings with each of your planning and economic development offices to kind of talk about the municipal side of that. And we'll be meeting with private stakeholders as well over the summer to help inform that SEDS process. And we'll provide kind of an initial draft and some initial SWOT analysis. So I will give to you all once we put that together. And we are continuing to work with our EDA officer on kind of making sure that we are satisfying all the requirements of that document to ensure that we have a good and sound SEDS that will allow potentially the ability to apply for US EDA funding for various projects. And you have to have an approved SEDS in order to be active and be eligible for those funding mechanisms. So go ahead.
Great. So let's then go back to item six when we go into executive session. So can I have a motion to enter into executive session with the MetroCog board members?
I moved.
Thank you.
Back to the scene second.